Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another Talking Rugby Union podcast. I'm joined with the big boss, Max Ashcroft, as well as, my other boss, Chris Hill.
Not quite as big.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Yeah. All right. Last week was quite busy for myself and Chris down at Twickenham Stadium. It feels like a long time ago now. Had a chat with Eddie. And then we went to a couple of other things for the NCA as well as other things.
Yeah, it was a productive week, Joe. Kicking off quite a busy time for TRU over the Six Nations. So, it was good to get in the mixture down at Twickenham and hopefully more of that to come.
Yeah, so this is essentially going to be our big kind of Six Nations preview podcast. This is a podcast, isn't it? Yeah, podcast.
It is a podcast.
I feel a bit ring rusty for some reason.
I'm nervous, mate.
Because Max is there, that's why.
Yeah, I'm scared of what he's going to say. So we're going to be just talking about kind of, well, with Max. Max has only got a limited time that he's available to us because he's big time. And we're just going to talk right now about the men's preview, but a bit of context coming into the situation.
Look at a smile on his face when he said big time.
So a bit of context coming into this tournament. England come to the Six Nations off the back of a Rugby World Cup final loss, and Wales come into it as the current Grand Slam champions.
And Sam Underhill's going to play number 8.
This is the... that's where we're at. But we'll kick it off. We're talking about this men's tournament, which is going to be... Who are your favourites to win? We'll start off with Max Ashcroft.
The whole tournament or this weekend?
He's going to win the whole... This whole tournament.
Who's going to win the whole thing? I reckon Wales will win. I do. Just purely because I have my favourite player playing for them, Nick Tompkins.
It's taken you 3 minutes or so to...
Being completely snubbed by England. And now he's decided, right, he's obviously got a Welsh grandma somewhere. I'm going to go play for Wales. And fair play to him, and I think he'll do... Hopefully he gets picked. I don't know, has the team been released yet?
It's Thursday. So the day after this podcast is being released...
Well, I might even tweet about it if he gets picked on Thursday.
Do you follow him? I need to follow him.
There is a picture of you in a Scotland shirt in the office, so I wouldn't be surprised if you pick up a Wales shirt from somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
Tompkins is number one.
I like the team. I like the squad that they've picked. I think it's got youth and experience in there. They're not afraid that, you know, they're trying a few things, which is what you need to do post World Cup. I think you also need to just add a few new people into a squad post World Cup, just to liven it up a bit and sort of freshen it up. You know, I think Ireland have done it a little bit. They've got a few new guys in the mix, haven't they? Caelan Dorris, his first cap, is it? That's great. Big number 8 in there with Stander at 6, isn't he? And you know, big, but it's a good of like new guys and sort of your old guys in Stander. I think that's really good. And that back line, you know, it can do damage. If you know they're all firing, it's going to do damage. Scotland have obviously got their own issues in building up to this Six Nations. Yeah, stuff with Finn Russell. You know, things are being said about Gregor Townsend. Is he losing the squad? Is he losing the players? So I think they're going to have a really mixed Six Nations, if I'm honest. France are France, you know. And, you know, England, you know, Eddie, there's always been method behind his madness.
Yeah.
But I don't think there is this time. You know, Alex Donbrandt should be starting number 8 for England. He was outstanding against Saracens on Sunday. The try he set up for Danny Kerr was probably one of the best sort of individual pieces of skill I've seen for a long time. Physicality wise, he was up there. And there's a few other lads, you know, that you think should be, there's a few other lads that you think should be in the mix. I think all the stuff with Saracens, is it going to have an effect on them? Is it going to have an effect on Itoje and Farrell going in? Ultimately, mentally, it probably could have an effect on them. You know, the Saracens media team have been very good in keeping them away from the limelight, keeping them away from the press, but ultimately, it's going to take its toll. You know, it's a club that they've been at and know so much to, and now they're going to be playing in the Championship. People are going to be asking him, where are you going to be? You know, no Premiership team can afford them, so they're going to have to take pay cuts to be able to, you know, to ultimately play in the Premiership, all this sort of stuff, is it going to have an effect? You know, it might do, and we're going to find out how much of an effect it's going to have on Sunday, a massive game in Paris. And you know, the French could pull it out of the bag. The standard of French rugby has been really good this season in the domestic game. I've been enjoying watching it. You know, and I think in the lower leagues of French rugby as well, they've got a really good structure. Yeah. They, you know, they're bringing young French lads up really well, and you know, they've got some really good teams in those lower leagues. And I think, you know, we know if they can get a solid team together, get the right coach, that they can do damage. Really tough game for England.
You definitely covered a lot there, mate. I think I'd go with England to win it, Joe. I think.
Yep.
I think the first two games are massive. They're massively important, and I think you'd probably say that for any tournament, that if you don't do well in the first two games, you're likely not to be successful. But I think for England, if they do go to Paris and get the result on Sunday, which is a massive game for them, that sets them up nicely going into Scotland. I think with France, yes, there's a lot of talk about the excitement, but I think England, even though they have a young squad, have that sort of experience with big games. Mm-hmm. And I think they could take that into that France game and get the result. And like I say, like Max pointed on, Scotland have a lot of worries at the moment in terms of how much control Gregor Townsend's got on that team. I mean, Finn Russell not been there is massive. I think a lot of weight's going to be put on Stuart Hogg's shoulders now, if it wasn't already with the likes of the retirements of Greg Laidlaw and stuff like that. So I think there's a lot more pressure on the likes of France and Scotland than there is England. And I think if England can get the job done in those first two games, yes, Ireland's never going to be an easy game at Twickenham, but I think they could go all the way and potentially get the Grand Slam.
Nice.
Bold. I think Wales are going through a bit of change, and they have got exciting players, and Pivac, I know, you know, would have spoken to Gatland a lot. He was in charge of that Barbarians game, and I think that sort of Barbarians game may have helped Wales to settle in and know what Pivac expects of these guys going into a new era for them. But I just think the experience England have and the fact Eddie's picked a strong core of that squad, who was there from pretty much June last year in the summer internationals right the way through to that World Cup final, I think will only benefit them. So yeah, I do think England will win, and a Grand Slam isn't out of their reach.
Oh. And apparently, I heard a stat earlier, apparently the year after a World Cup, there's always a Grand Slam.
Well, there you go then. It's done. Yeah.
Done.
Can't tell you the years, but, you know, there's my little fun fact for today.
I think England was one of them, wasn't it?
In 2016, yeah.
Yeah.
In 2012, Wales.
So.
2008, Ireland.
There you go.
Stato.
There we go.
Someone's done his prep.
Oh, I mean, someone has to.
He's the only one reading a list.
Yeah. that's not on the list, though. Yeah. Everyone knows this is a shared document.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Four of the six Six Nations coaches have new head coaches. Does that come into effect, especially when you look at two of them of fairly big teams? Well, three.
I think with Wales and Wales and Ireland, not as much, more so Ireland, because Farrell's been there for so long. He knows the players really well, and Max quite rightly pointed out that, you know, he's brought these young lads in. So there is that sort of change there. And I don't think there's going to be too much of a, you know, players having to adapt massively to the systems and the demands of Farrell once. And I think Pivac's had a bit of time with that Wales squad because of that Barbarians game. I think Italy's going to be an interesting one. You know, we're speaking to Seb Negri, you spoke to him this week, Joe, that, you know, he's excited by the fact that this is a new regime at Italy, and obviously all the great work Conor O'Shea did in terms of bringing Italy forward as a rugby nation, not just on the international scene. It's really, really positive. It's going to be interesting to see how this Six Nations goes, because you were saying he's not actually signed a contract, has he, until a full-time contract?
So his contract runs until the end of June.
Yeah.
And essentially after the end of June,
who knows?
Who's going to be in charge of Italy then?
Yeah. So that's the thing. I mean, you know, you don't want to say it, but Italy could easily finish bottom of the table again, get that wooden spoon, and it's back to square one for them. But so I think they're the most fascinating one, really. As much as the spotlight will be on Wales and Ireland, I think Italy are going to be the most fascinating to see actually how much of an impact can this guy have in charge.
Yeah, and that is the important thing to stress. But then what I also noticed was, I was looking around the squads, Wales and Ireland have a strong English influence, whether that's through players, coaches, or both. So Ireland, you've got your Andy Farrell's head coach, Billy Burns, who else is in there? There's another English lad in there. Will Addison's in there. And obviously we know like lads like Mike Cayley are knocking on the door, trying to get into that squad as well. And then in Wales, we've got Will Rowlands, Nick Tompkins, Rhys Summit, who's based at an English club. What is it with all these kind of players that have been developed through the English system that A, they can't get games for England, and B, well, essentially, they're having to go elsewhere for caps?
I guess it's just Eddie missing, deciding not to, you know, that they're not in favour in the English setup. And, you know, I talk about Nick Tompkins again, but he's been the best 13 in the Premiership, one of the best 13s in the Premiership for years. Years and years. He's always consistently played well. And he's never been involved. Has he even been involved in a Barbarians game or anything? I don't think he has.
No. I don't know if he's been called up into a camp at all. I don't know if he can get called up into a camp, can he still choose to play for somebody else? I don't.
Yeah, because as long as you don't get the full cap that's kind of the main.
That's the thing. Really. Max makes a good point. You know, it's been a lot of the spotlight. It's been Tuilagi, Slade, Joseph, and there's not really been. And then obviously Farrell's slotted in there as well in terms of the centre. So it's not really been a massive sort of change of the many players that have been in the centre partnership that Eddie's looking at. What have you got? We've got a Nick Tompkins page, yeah.
Wikipedia fan page.
Talking
about Rugby Union wasn't enough.
Yeah.
I played for all Albanians, there you go.
I thought he played for all Albanian. Oh, he played at all OEs and then went to all Albanian after being in the Saracens Academy. He's played for the England Saxons. That would have been, I'm going to guess, the tour to South Africa.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. But there you go, yeah. Wrexham born grandmother. There you go, Max.
Barely Wales.
There you go. But what I'm saying is that a lot of these guys have been playing well, but, you know, they've just not been in favour, you know. I've just sworn this, apologies. You might have bleep that one out.
My editing's going to take 2 hours longer now.
I think, you know, that Will Rowlands?
Yeah, the second row at Wasps.
He's always consistently played well for Wasps, always played well.
He was in, I think, three of my teams of the season last year. Team of the week, sorry.
Will Griff-Jones, still relatively new to the Premiership. 2016?
Yeah, Josh said before that he's 3 years, I think he's been there.
Yeah, 3 years, so this is his third year, shall we say. So new, but he's an absolute unit. He's been scrummaging well. It looks like he's got a bit fitter.
Definitely.
Around the park, you know. And then who were the other guys you said?
Rhys Summit, who's an English-based player but raised and played a lot of his.
I don't blame them. Yeah. I don't blame them. They should, too, right? They should go and play for Wales and go play for Ireland or whatever. They should. I don't blame them at all. If Eddie's never had the conversation with them, or he has had the conversation saying, you're not even on my radar. But I wouldn't be surprised if Nick Tompkins gets signed for. Who's he going to get signed for over in Wales? I think that's
Scarlets.
I think that's probably.
Probably Ospreys, actually, because they are
probably going to be announced relatively soon that he'll be off somewhere. To be honest, I think a lot of there's going to be a lot of lads going over to the Scarlets and to Cardiff in the next coming months when all the Premiership teams want to clean house.
Yeah,
I think Faletau will be off pretty soon.
Why is that?
Sorry.
No. But yeah, a lot of. I think if anything, what the Saracens thing's going to have done is going to give a lot of opportunities to the sort of the Irish teams and to the Welsh teams, you know. So it'd be interesting to see sort of the transfer market. It's going to be more, it's going to be really dominant this year. There's going to be a lot of players sort of on the market from a Saracens point of view. It'd be interesting to see where they go. I can't wait to see where they go, actually.
We should do a transfer deadline just for Saracens.
They won't be playing at Amptill. Next year.
You barely wanted to play at Amptill, so there you go. Just trying to think.
Amptill, great club.
Shall we just do predictions for this weekend then? We'll wrap this little section up because we've actually been going for a bit longer than I think we realised.
Always the case.
Okay, so the first game. Oh, God. The first game this weekend is Wales, Italy in Cardiff.
Wales win. As easy as that, I think
Wales wins if Nick Tompkins starts at trick.
I might put that on.
Wales.
I might put that on.
Wales have injury struggles because obviously Jonathan Davies is injured.
I think he will start.
They're talking about playing George North there. You'd rather play a centre who plays week in, week out.
Start him, he gets a hat trick.
Interesting, who plays on the wing for Wales?
It'd be Josh Adam, Rhys Sammet.
Or Johnny McNichol.
Was he not injured?
Actually, that'd be a good bet if Nick Tompkins does start.
I think it'd be a great bet.
Lads, we're not getting sponsored by anyone for this. We don't have to talk about betting. Regardless, it'd just be a nice day out in Cardiff for everyone that goes.
Yeah. I think it's a Wales win, that bonus point.
Yeah, and then the late game on the Saturday is Ireland-Scotland. Now, we're going to talk a bit more in a second to Gary Heatley, who's Talking Rugby Union's Scottish correspondent. Obviously, Finn Russell unavailable for Scotland because of alcohol-related issues.
That's what we're led to believe, yes.
Apparently, Finn wants more than 2 pints, essentially, is the main thing of that. But we'll hear more from Gary in a sec. Good lad, just a good lad.
5 pints and a bifter, that's what he wants.
The dream.
Does that make Ireland's path to a win on Saturday maybe a bit easier?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I reckon he's by far one of the best tens in the world. And I wouldn't be surprised if he starts for Lions.
Ooh.
Really?
Yeah.
To be fair, I called for him to start for the Lions in 2017.
Yeah, well, Farrell will be playing against Amstel, so he won't be in the winning.
Farrell will be too busy playing at Doncaster and Amstel. So Finn, who's nice and cushy in Paris, straight in.
I bet he has a great time.
I think if this game was the way around, Scotland-Ireland, I reckon Scotland would be well up for it. If anything, the crowd would have been well up for it at Murrayfield. The fact it's in Dublin, I think, makes it a lot easier as well for Ireland and Andy Farrell to get off to a winning start.
But you could make the argument that them not being in Scotland, they're not going to have the crowd kind of hounding them. There's not going to be maybe even a crowd aversion, because Finn Russell is obviously Scotland's best player and most important player.
I just think Saturday evening in Scotland, start of the Six Nations, yes, the Finn Russell's thing, a lot of would have divided opinion, but I reckon they would have got behind the team regardless. And I think the fact that it's at Ireland, a few Guinnesses deep.
I think it's an afternoon fixture, they are going to be a few Guinnesses deep.
So I do think Ireland will get off to a winning start, home win.
Well, there we go. And then the Sunday game was France versus England.
Tough one, isn't it? I mean, I've just said to England they're going to win the Grand Slam, so I can't really say anything else than England winning.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, now anyone listening for this podcast over the next few weeks, Chris isn't going to be here, but I can just say that he's going to say that England are going to win the games every week now.
I think England will get the job done, purely what I said before, in terms of the experience. And I think if they weren't to get the job done, it would be Eddie Jones be then facing questions like what's happened, you know, since all this momentum generated by the World Cup. Yeah.
Pressure is on.
Yeah, the pressure is on.
It's a bit like McGregor and the Cowboy fight. The pressure was on McGregor to win because his career might have been over.
So England going to win in 42 seconds or whatever it was.
Yeah, so I think the pressure's on. If Jones doesn't have a good performance on Sunday, the pressure is on, and then the method behind the madness becomes madness.
Does it all stem Great. From whoever...
Write that down.
We should have
that. That's the name of the podcast.
That is. So, honestly, there's pressure on them. Huge pressure.
Yeah.
If they lose, people will
go to Scotland as well the week after.
People will question. God. Really are going to question.
Does it all stem from number 8? Because it looks like, from what me and Chris heard last week, from what's been coming out this week, it looks like Ben Earl's going to play 8.
Wow. I didn't know that was the case that Ben Earl was going to start.
I thought it was going to be,
like Matt said on the start, that it could be Underhill, 8, Curry, and then maybe drop a Toji back.
I think it's going
to
be...
But how can we even be having this conversation, drop a Toji to 6? How is this a conversation?
Because Eddie's so stubborn and he didn't want to pick a specialist number 8.
You know, it's bizarre that we're...
He's not trying anyone. Since the Six Nations last year, Billy's played every game.
What, Simmons has been voted for European Player of the Year?
So a few lads that have been dropped, yeah.
Don Brand is the best number 8 in the Premiership.
I mean, Ludlam can play there, can't he? But
well, he's probably been one of the best number 8s in the world on if you go on form.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
wait until Super Rugby starts. We'll have to say that.
But so I don't.
Nathan Hughes.
Nowhere near the squad.
17 carries, 170.
Nathan Hughes for.
No, Eddie doesn't like him.
So,
which is annoying.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the main. You know, a lot of talk in the past has been about, well, who's going to play in the centres, and you know, who's going to play at ten. But that, I think, that's going to be the crucial selection. Everyone's going to be looking at when the team drops before the weekend.
And if anyone cares, Wales, Ireland, England from me as well. Max, you have to go.
I have to go. But it's been a pleasure.
You're busy, man, mate.
Busy, man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this weekend. I think there's some real good matchups. And yeah, hopefully England get the job done. But yeah.
Big Sunday for you, mate.
Big Sunday.
The Super Bowl as
Super Bowl, well. Yeah. We're watching the Super Bowl, aren't we, Joe?
We are.
Chris, you're well, more than welcome. Not but not don't feature ourselves on sport.
No, it's not.
But yeah, the biggest sporting occasion on Sunday is the NFL.
I actually thought for a second you were going to say England versus France.
Your own podcast.
In terms of sporting,
it's the biggest sporting event in the world.
Absolutely, yeah. But not for me.
Who's half time again?
Who's Liverpool playing?
Southampton at home on Saturday. Oof.
God, it's turning into the Peter Crouch podcast already, this.
Nice link, lad.
That's only down the road, they only do that down the road.
Yeah. Maybe we can get him on.
Crouchy.
Talking about lineouts.
Yeah. Why not? Why not?
Well, that's all from Max Ashcroft. Myself and Chris are going to be talking under-20s and women's rugby after we hear from Gary Heatley.
And we're now joined by regular Talking Rugby Union contributor Gary Heatley on the phone. Gary, how are things?
Hi, Joe, not bad, thanks. Thanks for having me.
No, it's all right. So now we're gonna have a bit of a chat about certain events that have been unfolding in the Scotland camp, as well as just kind of how things are going for the men. And then we're going to talk about the under-20s, how they've maybe been aided a bit by the Super 6 tournament that's come into play recently. And then the women, who have kind of had quite an interesting lead into this Six Nations. But we'll start with the men. Gary, the headlines have all been taken by one man in particular, who does, to be fair to him, regularly take the headlines. Finn Russell's omission from the Scotland squad. What's been happening with that then?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, that's been the kind of the talk of the town for the last 10 days or so. I mean, you know, obviously he came back into camp last Sunday after the Saracens racing game. He obviously enjoyed a few drinks, I think, on the way back up the road, and then seemed to carry on drinking, didn't seem to listen to senior players or coaches as far as we're aware, and then decided to go back home to his parents' house that night, had a meeting with Gregor Townsend the day after, but he didn't seem to obviously manage to resolve things. He then played for racing on the weekend there. Last night, obviously, pictures emerged that he seems to be in Dubai now having a break, so yeah, it all still seems to be a bit up in the air. Gregor spoke yesterday, and obviously, you know, very much about the squad that he's got with him at the minute, preparing for Saturday and trying to ward off questions about Finn, but obviously they kept coming. But I think it doesn't seem to be any sort of impasse as yet as to when he's going to come back. So it's, yeah, whether he's back for England next week, I mean, that would be quite a jump from where we are now, I think, to be honest. But yeah, I think obviously Townsend's trying to look and focus on the guys he's got out in Spain at the minute preparing for the Ireland game.
Yeah, of course. And the thing is, this isn't exactly the first time we've seen Finn Russell and Gregor Townsend come to odds. The game at Twickenham, which finished, I think, 38-all off the top of my head. Apparently, Finn said these tactics aren't working, and then he led Scotland to 5 tries and a draw in the end of it. Are they quite contrasting characters, the pair of them?
Well, that's quite strange, because, I mean, I guess when Finn first came into the centre, everyone thought of him as a similar sort of player as when Gregor was a kind of, you know, a maverick, a playmaker, a guy who perhaps didn't play by the playbook, if you like. But, you know, I think a lot of people are comparing, you know, saying that this incident at Twickenham kind of started this whole thing. I mean, I think they're kind of different issues. I mean, you know, a player standing up and speaking during a match, I think, is a different thing than, you know, flouting the rules, flouting the off-field regulations, I guess, which is why he's done when he's come into camp last week. And, you know, it seems from some comments coming out from other players, you know, some of the other players are pretty disappointed with the way that all unfolded. So, you know, I think perhaps, yeah, himself and Gregor have had not the best relationship for a while, but I think, you know, they're slightly different incidents, and yeah, it just seems like it's still going to take a bit of sorting out. I don't really know how it's going to unfold. It's a real shame for Scotland going into this tournament as well, with obviously the best player missing, perhaps, and you know, having lost 3 very senior players, you know, Greg Laidlaw, John Bartley, and Tommy Seymour, since the World Cup, and then losing Darcy Graham to injury last week. So it's been a bit of a rocky warm-up to what was already going to be a tough tournament.
Yeah, of course, and it doesn't get much tougher than kind of the opening fixture, which is against Ireland. What do you expect to see from this Scotland side at the weekend?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think what we can expect is not as bad a start as they had in Japan against Ireland. I mean, that was just... Gregor's spoken about it, players have spoken about for whatever reason, the couple of days leading up to that game just seemed to go awry. As I say, the squad are out in Spain just now. They've sort of broken with tradition, I guess, and tried to get away from everything for a few days before the game. I think they fly to Dublin on Thursday. So they certainly won't start as badly as the pool match in Japan. I think they'll come out with a bit more fire in the belt, a bit more of a set game plan as to what they're going to try and do. I mean, you know, it is a bit of a... It's going to be interesting to see what team gets picked on Thursday, because there is a few new faces that could feature. But I think the guys up front especially will know they have to front up in that first 20-30 minutes to give Scotland any chance of getting a foothold in this game, really.
And do you think Scotland maybe have a bit more of an advantage than usual, because fundamentally Ireland are having to get used to a new head coach and a new way of playing?
Yeah, as you say, I mean, the whole tournament should be really quite interesting with a number of new coaches, new captains and things. I think with Ireland, it will be interesting to see how they kind of adapt to that. I mean, it's going to be a big day, obviously, for Andy Farrell. I mean, Scotland have won in Dublin for 10 years, but, you know, I think if Scotland can go there and compete. I mean, I think the pack, we're starting to come onto a bit more of a game. I think it'll be interesting to see if he picks young Scott Cummings in the second row. He seems to be pushing guys hard for plays, a bit more robust and a bit more, you know, he carries a lot more ball. Back row is going to be interesting, you know, obviously if Jamie Ritchie can carry on where he left off in the World Cup. So they've certainly got a chance. I mean, I say missing Finn's obviously massive. It's going to be a massive game for Adam Hastings, presumably if he picks against the start ahead of Duncan Weir. And then obviously Darcy Graham missing is a massive blow. So the back three kind of makeup will be interesting as well. But I think with Ireland sort of starting their new era as well, it's going to be an interesting game.
Right, and we'll move from the men, from the senior men to the juniors, to the under-20s. Obviously, one of the things in Scottish rugby is there's only two main province teams that play in the Pro 14, and now having introduced that Super 6 tournament, are we seeing now that the Scottish under-20s are getting a lot more game time, a lot more experience, and the chance to develop more in preparation for a tournament like this?
Yeah, I mean, a few more of those guys who are now going to be core guys for the under-20 team. You'd say, I think Connor Boyle from what's winning is probably skipper of the team again. Probably 10-12 of the team that will start will be regulars in the Super 6 the last couple of months. So, yeah, playing that level of rugby, which is much more physical than the tennis premiership was last year, could only have helped them. And also a lot of those guys were, you know, in their first year under-20s last year, you know, so they're only 18 men, so they've got a bit of experience under their belt, although it was a pretty terrible year. They've got that, Six Nations and a World Championships under their belt, and the squad overall looks fairly strong. It's just, I think when they get injuries or they kind of have to dip into maybe, you know, more amateur players, if you like, it becomes a struggle with, as you say, the playing pool numbers. But they've got Sean Lamine and Shane Monroe in charge now, who are kind of pretty experienced, some guys who've been around the block a few times. So I think they'll add a bit of hardness to this squad, and they'll be open for a decent start against Ireland away on Friday night.
Yeah, of course. And obviously, finally, we'll talk about the women. Scotland have had this fantastic, fantastic run of fixtures in the lead-up. They had a tour to South Africa. I've seen recently they've just played Spain. So is... I mean, from that, you could probably make the assumption that Scottish women's rugby is on the rise.
Yeah, I mean, I think last year's Six Nations, after a rise in kind of 17-18, was disappointing. Last year, they lost all five games, and then obviously the change of coach came with Philip Doyle coming in, who won the Grand Slam with Ireland in 2013. So, you know, and the main aim for them this year is the World Cup qualifiers, which are in September, October time. He's making no bones about it. That's what they're working towards. That's why they're growing the squad. That's why I think he's already capped 7 new players in 5 games, and there's 5 more in the wider squad for this tournament. They beat South Africa twice. They did lose 2 autumn tests to Wales and Japan at home, which is disappointing. But the Spain performance 2 weeks ago was very promising, and I think Doyle's brought again a bit of a hard edge to the squad. I think maybe they needed someone to come in and really push them hard and really test them. There was maybe a few players whose positions were very safe, whereas now there's a bit more competition for places. They won in Ireland 2 years ago, so they'll be hoping they can repeat that on Sunday and get off to a good start, I guess.
And I kind of hate to big up English rugby on the Scottish rugby section of the podcast, but there's several players have come from, or are plying their trade, I suppose is probably the best way of putting it, in the Tyrrell's Premier 15s. Now, obviously, we've seen a couple of articles from you talking about how being in English rugby has helped these players develop. I mean, are you seeing
just generally, not even just talking about Scottish players in particular, but the how helpful the Tyrrells has been to the development of women's rugby as a whole in the UK, not even just talking about England or Scotland or Wales or Ireland.
Oh yeah, I mean absolutely, as you say, I think I've got the numbers off the top of my head, but the majority of the Scotland starting 15 will now probably be playing in the Tyrrells, and you know, I think it's the tournament just seems to be going from strength to strength, and yeah, I think the girls getting themselves down there, really playing hard games week in, week out. You know, in the domestic league up here still sort of dominated by two or three clubs. So, you know, you weren't getting that competition. Whereas now, you know, they're down there mixing with English internationalists. You know, there's a lot of clubs that have got sort of, you know, Spanish, Canadian internationalists, all that sort of thing. So I think it's really helped them. And I presume when they're coming back into camp together, there's now different ideas coming to the table. There's folk now with 30, 40 caps, the likes of Emma Whistle and Jade Conkle. You know, they're now kind of really believing they can compete at that level, so I think the Tyrrells has been a great thing for women's rugby.
Now Gary, those are all the questions I had. So firstly, what I really just want to say is thank you very much for joining us on the Talking Rugby Union podcast. I'm sure we'll be hearing from you every week, if not every other week on the podcast. And no, thank you very much for joining us, and good luck with the rest of Fingate, which I'm sure is going to kind of roll on for a few more weeks.
Yes, I'm sure it's got a wee bit to go, but yeah, let's hope for a great Six Nations in all three tournaments.
Many thanks to Gary once again for joining us on the Talking Rugby Union podcast. As I said before, Max Ashcroft's left us now. We're just going to talk a bit about under-20s rugby and then move on to women's rugby, because we've already heard about those two things from Gary. It's just me and Chris. Just under-20s. So obviously Ireland won it last year.
Yeah.
And they had a pretty decent Junior World Championship as well after that. England, in contrast, did not have a good under-26 Nations, and then did not have a particularly
best World Championships, no.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
No, you know, there's been a lot of expectation around England's under-20 side for quite a while, hasn't there? Because of the names it's produced and the high standards they hit, especially when it comes to Six Nations time and in the Junior World Championships over the last few years. And if you look to that squad on paper, you know, we were obviously down in and around the squad at Bisham Abbey before they flew out, yeah, to Argentina. And you look at some of those players who were in the squad, you know, you chatted to Ollie Slate-Holm, who's been tearing up again for Northampton. Fraser Dingwall's now in the England squad, senior setup, but just to name a couple of names there. And you do think that this group of players can achieve more, but I don't know whether, because we expect a lot of them, then when they do have a below par year, it's like all the criticism, like what's going wrong with England's age grade rugby. So I think they may have learnt a lot from last year. I think that whole side would have learnt. I know they're under a new coach now. So I think, you know, they're still going to be excited. These players have been tasting Premiership rugby, in the Premiership Cup, Premiership Shield, whatever. They have been tasting the top level and arguably the most exciting league in world rugby, so that's always a positive, and there's always excitement around the England under-20s camp before Six Nations. So hopefully they'll be able to improve on, you know, like I said, below par year last year.
And you know, there's a new head coach, Alan Dickens from Northampton. He's kind of moved into the role that Steve Bates.
Yep.
Steve Bates was in. Sorry, I've met Steve as well. I feel quite bad about that. You know, with these kind of age group things, it's a cycle, isn't it?
And
you know, and obviously clearly it was very early in the cycle, because in prior years it's not maybe been as cut and dry, if that makes sense. But the progression we've seen has continued to be good from this England under-20s team.
Yeah.
So we can't really be too disheartened by what happened out in Argentina.
No, I think, you know, for people who actually keep an eye on, you know, the under-20s and how the players are doing, I think you probably do take that approach, Joe. I think you feel like, yeah, you can't be too disappointed, but just the avid rugby fan who tuned into ITV4 or the World Rugby website to watch an England game would have been like, well, what's going on here? These lads, I've seen this lad play at Franklin's Gardens, or I've seen this lad play at the AJ Bell this season, and he performed a lot better than that, and the team performed a lot better than that. So, yeah, I think the squad that's been assembled is really, really exciting. There's some players who have had so much experience already at playing in pressure situations and big games for club level. So yep, I'm looking forward to seeing how they get on over the next month or so.
Yeah, I'm just kind of looking to see how many names that are really returning to this team, because obviously the thing is with age grade rugby, there is usually quite a high turnover in players, and that's kind of the experience, isn't it, for these players. It's about being able to step into an environment where maybe they don't have as much time with guys that they would at club level, and trying to progress that and trying to progress from there. Like, already jumping out for me are Richard Capstick, he was in there last year.
Yeah, he was in there. Alfie Barber, he was.
I thought he
in,
was.
In the summer, definitely.
Yeah, I'm just literally flicking through it right now.
Ross Tuivasa, obviously, we spoke to.
And then not many.
Josh.
Josh Hodge, but he's obviously with the senior men's squad, so he's not really going to, as far as I know, going to be playing a part.
Ollie's in there again, so.
Ollie Slatehome and Manuvan and Polo. That's kind of the only real, they're the only real players that we have been consistently in this England U20s team. So it's going to be a change-up again, and the thing is, new coaches, new head coach in particular, is going to be a bit different for everyone as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they always have a good chance, and that's kind of the exciting thing about under-20s rugby, is that realistically, anyone can win it.
Yeah, anyone can win it. I mean, like you said, at the top, Ireland won it last year, and they had a decent under-20 championships in South America, but I think France came from nowhere, didn't they, really? I think Australia were the team that everyone was backing in that final. They did play Australia in the final, didn't they?
Yeah.
But France came up trumps again in the summer, and they've got some really exciting players. We've seen, if you look at the senior squad now, how many young players have been picked.
Carbonell, Demba Bamba.
I mean, Entomac was there a few years ago, wasn't he, for the under-20s? So
Just 2 years ago.
So, you know, that's the strength. And it's like you say, I mean, you look at Wales, I can't pronounce his first name. Lloyd, Ian, is it, how do you say it? Who plays for Bristol? Oh. Ian Lloyd, is it?
Ewan
Lloyd?
I think it's the Welsh Ewan. Like, yeah, best Ewan. Same way the Irish ones that
he... Yeah, are, oh, you know, Ryan. He's burst into the scene at Ashton Gate this year, scored a try on his debut, for Bristol. Did, so... They've got talent in that squad as well, and like you say, Joe, it is anyone's game of the under-20s. So, and I think Scotland have picked quite a really strong squad. Just reading a few articles before this morning that they've picked some really strong players, and they will be massively disappointed because of what happened in the summer, that they're relegated from sort of the under-20s World Championship. So they will want to sort of go into this as a fresh start. I think Gary Heatley did a piece with Conor Boyle, who's the captain, and he said, you know, this is sort of a fresh start. We'll try and put last year behind us and use it as motivation to kick on. So, you know, you're looking at those teams, and those five teams really, and then obviously Italy fall under that bracket as well. But it is exciting, you know. It's good. I think it's all on Sky, although the majority of the England's games are on Sky. So yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting to watch.
And obviously, I don't think you've not heard my conversation with Gary yet, but essentially he talks about how Super Six has allowed for these players to get more competitive game time, whereas before they were kind of reliant on, you know, bits and bobs.
And that's probably why we're seeing more headlines from Scotland, people being excited about this under-20 team, because they've been able to tune into the BBC website, BBC Scotland, and watch these lads in Super Six action. So Gary's absolutely right. These guys are now getting exposed not only to, you know, the wider audience because they're on telly, but to this high level rugby. And, you know, I'm not too clued in on how kind of a standards the Tennent's Premiership is there. And obviously, you know, we've seen the likes of Johnny Matthews go from his club up to Glasgow, so there is talent there. But to have this other sort of league which has been showcased and gives you that really, really big learning experience is massive for the ones when he set up.
Yeah, and obviously the contrast is to Johnny Matthews, who's a friend of TIU, is that he kind of learnt the men's game here in a competitive men's league before going up there, and that's essentially what Scotland is trying to recreate.
Exactly.
Because they've got, in contrast to everyone else, a pretty small playing pool.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's kind of the important thing to highlight there. Yeah, that's kind of all we've got written down for under-20s. Any predictions about who's going to win that one?
I would say I'm going to go Ireland, I think. I think Ireland will.
That's who I was thinking.
Ireland or France, I think.
Okay, fair enough. So,
even though I've just said England will be exciting, but, you know,
England will be exciting. Yeah. It doesn't mean they're necessarily going to win games.
Yeah.
You know, same way Argentina are exciting, or Fiji are exciting.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're going to win it. I mean, Vern Carter, that's a different matter. Women's Six Nations Championships kicks off as well, of course, this weekend.
Yeah.
What I've got written down here is, can we really look much further than England?
No. End of podcast. No, you can't really. But, you know, we've eulogised about it so much over the last 12 months, Joe, and we've been in and around that England camp, and it is what a year 2019 was. I don't think really it could have gone much better for Simon Middleton and his side. You know, all from January last year when the contracts were announced and women's rugby was going to be a full time job and a viable career option for these girls, is since then they've not let that sort of backing by the RFU down. I didn't expect them to either. You know, the talent in that squad, the experience in that squad, and the fact that it is sort of this side that sticks together because they're under the contracts, I think really massively helps with the fact that they are able to bring in new players. And Simon struck the balance absolutely perfectly. The Six Nations last year was unbelievable. I think everyone targeted that first, that France game as a big one for England, and they absolutely blew them out of the water. And then from there, they've obviously learnt a lot from their time in America last summer, and even in the autumns they showed exactly what they're capable of by beating France when the when their backs were against the wall in both games, over in Clermont and down in Exeter. So yeah, they're coming into this year as red hot favourites, Joe. You can't really look past them. Just looking at the squad that was announced on Monday, it's great to see Harriet Miller-Mills back in. She was out for I think 2 years, nearly 2 years with an injury, but she's back in the squad. Gordon, you talked, I said there about those sort of young players that have been brought in by Simon. You've got uncaps, Amelia Harper's in there, Millie Wood's been selected from Gloucester. So, you know, there is that room not only to use these core players that have really helped England get back, not back on the map, but really to sort of get themselves as a world power in rugby again, but also bring in this youth. So it's a good balance in the squad, and I fully expect them to do well in the tournament.
And the thing is, obviously, with the women's game is that there's a World Cup next year as well, so they kind of need to be kind of start going on that upward trajectory in preparation for New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mo Hunt said to us last year that the whole that those autumn internationals, and yes, it was, you know, there was a couple against France and the one against Italy, but I mean, the France games that Mo said, well, this is where it really starts now. Mm. We've had sort of the Six Nations where it was, let's see how it goes. We've had that development stage in America, and development was the key word that came out of the camp during that time. But this is where it now starts. And Sarah Hunt said that to us, didn't she, Joe, when we were down down in Bedford. She said, you know, yes, we've had the development. Yes, it's been, oh, it's a transition phase, but now the serious business begins, because next year is that World Cup in New Zealand, and England know they're going to be one of the favourites to challenge, really, France and obviously New Zealand for the title.
Yeah, and what I'm going to say, and I think you'll agree with me, is that all the teams are going to have good players, and they all have good players now, and that is partly due because so many of them play in the Tyrrell's Premier 15s. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about this with Gary in the phone call, and it's a bit of a case of repeating myself, but I mean, I want to hear a different voice on it as well, is that the league, the Tyrrells, is so competitive that it's now very attractive for these female players to essentially uproot their lives and go to a team where they can play pretty decent competitive rugby.
Yeah, it's interesting because we spoke to Kate Holder, didn't we, last week, down in London, and she said pretty much the same, Joe, didn't she? She said, you know, these girls are now having to make a decision of putting aside a job that they've worked really hard for to balance that with rugby, and it is hard at times for these girls, but to have that option of maybe thinking, well, if I play well for your Loughbridge, your Gloucesters, your Wasps, wherever, and, you know, the RF, and I keep consistently performing really well and England pick me up, that is a massive viable option for me to put a job as wherever, in an office job or a dentist or whatever, to one side to pursue a career in rugby. And it's absolutely huge that Tyrrells and Tyrrells Premier 15s is now sort of that stepping stone to becoming a full-time job. So it's great, and you can just see the sort of, I'm looking at the list in front of me in terms of all these clubs, Joe, that have been represented. A lot of those teams in the Tyrrells are represented, of course. The top teams like your Saracens and Harlequins have a bulk of that squad, but it really is exciting that you are able to bring in these young players who probably, and no disrespect to them, not many people have heard of before they get into England. So it's really exciting for England. They have, there's Katie Day and the Keens, Sarah Hunter's around, but also they have these people, these girls who are probably right at the start of their rugby careers, and it is actually a career now.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's going to be a bit of competition in the team for the open side flanker position. Marley Packer ruled out of the tournament due to an ankle injury, which is pretty sad, actually.
Yeah, big loss, because she was brilliant. The France game, I think both games, actually, she was really good, especially away from home. She was outstanding. Yeah, her and Sarah Beckett were excellent. So, she's going to be a massive loss.
Yeah, and there'll be plenty of women's content on Talking Rugby Union over the course of the Six Nations.
Absolutely. Keep your eyes peeled for that.
Yeah, you're going to have to. You're not going to be about.
No, I'll be Sunday reading yourself. It at 4 a.m. in the morning in Australia, probably.
I mean, you don't have to read it when it comes out.
Yeah.
You could just wait until you wake up.
Yeah, I could do.
You know, that's what I'd do. I mean, would I? Depends if I was awake.
No, I'm keen for the content.
Keen for ruggers. So that's pretty much drawn us to the close of this Talking Rugby Union podcast.
I know we've not really mentioned any of the other countries in terms of the women's, but
well, the thing is, they all have players that are familiar names to anyone who frequents the Tyrrell's Premier 15s. Rona Lloyd at Scotland.
Yeah, I mean,
plenty of Irish players.
Obviously, Gary would have probably said it as well, but you know, there's high hopes for Scotland that they can really kick on for qualifying for the World Cup. There's some great, like I say, Rona Lloyd's absolutely flying. Rachel Malcolm is a great leader in that team that Gary's spoken to. So Scotland have got to be excited. There's a bit of uncertainty about Wales in terms of their coaching setup at the moment. So,
for these countries,
they're all going to be building towards qualifying for the 2021 World Cup, aren't they? So, so it's going to be a big Six Nations for all of them.
I'm going to say England win.
Yeah, I think it could easily be a Grand Slam.
And I'd love to say a part of that wasn't English bias. It probably is.
A little bit is for me, but the fact that you look at the progression of England and what they've done in terms of turning everything professional and catching up with the likes of New Zealand.
Yeah.
They are ahead of the game, and that's the way the game's turning, and England have got everything in place to keep that going. So I can't imagine. I'll be very surprised if England don't come away with 5 points. But it's a big game this weekend, isn't it? They're going back to France. France will be massively up for after being beaten the last three times they've played the Red Roses. So I think they'll be up for it. That's a big game again, I think, for England. If they come through that, I think it's going to be four straight wins to win the Six Nations.
Yeah. No, I think England, I think in terms of professionalism, I think professionalism's the big key here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll probably see, we've already seen a couple of Italians come to the Tyrrells. I think we'll start seeing French players come over to the Tyrrells as well, because I think it's such a lucrative way of living. And I think when that starts to happen, that is when the women's game maybe will go professional on a more wider scale as well with the club game. But what I'm going to say is, please look out for columns from our columnists, Josh Beaumont, Seb Negri, Ben Mosses, who's going to be our French columnist. He played with Bath, with Max at Bath.
Yeah, he played with Bath. He was at Bristol. He's now enjoying himself playing in Nice. His column's out on Friday.
Stad,
a really good
Nice
column,
one.
Actually. Yeah. You know, we try and get people, our columnists to write themselves if they've got the time, and Ben's first one's really good, so worth keeping an eye on for that.
Yeah, Tom Grabham, Wales, formerly of
Ospreys and Scarlets. So he's rubbed shoulders with the likes of Alan Wynne, Dan Bigger, Reece Webb, all of those guys, and Tom's column's excellent as well, so that'll be out at some point this week.
Scott Lawrence for Scotland, and then for Ireland. Still trying to.
No, we've got an interview with, I'd say, an Irish rugby great this week.
Brian O'Driscoll?
Not quite Brian O'Driscoll.
Stephen Ferris?
Not quite Stephen Ferris.
Ronan O'Cara?
No.
Who's it?
Sean O'Brien.
Oh, yeah, he's pretty good, I suppose.
Yeah.
I feel like I've absolutely done him there, because he's one of my favourite players.
European Player of the Year, numerous European titles.
What year?
Still, it's European Player of the Year.
2008 Grand Slam winner, there we go. 2008? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with, yeah. Jamie Heaslip, Stephen Ferris.
I think his first cap was after the Six Nations.
I tried. Oh, no, yeah, 2009.
Yeah.
2009, that makes sense. Thank you very much to listening to this latest episode of the Talking Rugby Union podcast, Six Nations edition. Chris is going to feature on one more next week.
Yeah, next week we'll do one.
That's his last week.
Last week.
Before he... Goes
for away.
How long are you gone for?
Just under, I think, 3 weeks it is.
It's quite a long time, actually.
It is a long time.
So if the quality of writing does decrease on TRU, blame me. Because I'll be doing podcasts, mate. I've got a few things on. But no, thank you very much for listening. You can find Chris at @C_heel on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find me at @JoeHarvey34, Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. You can find Talking Rugby Union at Talk Rugby
Union. There he is, shutting stuff.
Is that what he's doing?
Max Astroff just walking past.
Laughing at us.
Yes.
You can find TRU at Talk Rugby Union on Twitter, at Talking Rugby Union on Instagram, and just type in Talking Rugby Union into the Facebook search bar, and you'll find us pretty sharpish. Enjoy the first round of the Six Nations. We very much intend on doing so too, and I'm sure you'll hear us next time.